Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
November 3, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. This indeed is the O'Shelly Effect, and it is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're putting up with listening to me say this. Anyway, Thursday, and yes, we did go to air a little late on the live stream. Little confusion about my scheduling, believe it or not, because tonight we have the return of Larry Hancock in hour number two, so we'll have Larry on and a special extra guest who I have never interviewed on a show before, but I have worked with in other capacities relating to media, and we will be discussing, at least in part, the JFK assassination in the second hour. So that's what's going to go on here sometime around 9 p.m. Eastern in that place we used to call America. But in the first hour, the mighty Mike Swanson is with us. And, of course, he is the man behind WallStreetWindow.com, the guy who is the author of The War State, that red book you see on the just-restored website at O'Shelly.com, because we were down for almost a week. Indeed. No website, but we still distributed podcasts for a minute. Everything is behind on the website, I know that, but I just got it back to public again today. So, welcome back to the internet world. Yes, I do own O'Shelly.com, even though I had a dispute and all that good stuff. it's all straight now, baby, and we are a fully operational Death Star once again. But like I said, Mike Swanson, be in the know, go to WallStreetWindow.com, that's his website. It is not just about Wall Street, you can be informed. Matter of fact, I've been entertained by a bunch of the emails that I get by signing up over there. But also he's doing some local news stuff, a lot of things there. Author, Why the Vietnam War, is also another book he's written, the first in a volume, in a three-volume set about that conflict, with information that you don't see in anybody else's books. How about that? So a re-education. Did I use that phrase? I did. A re-education about that conflict, maybe so. And an essential piece of education with The War State. Constant education with WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the no-go there. There it all is. Mike Swanson, also just a hell of a guy who I might twist his arm and get him to participate in a conference coming on later on this month. But we'll see what happens. And we won't have his services next week, so let me shut up and get to him. Mike, I killed 3 minutes here doing all that. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I want to, tell the audience, because they follow us every week now for the past several years, that I've relaunched my website, at least the homepage of it. I was beta testing it for a couple weeks, but it now looks like kind of like a newspaper. Some of these newspaper websites might look like, or a general news website, just the way it's laid out. And even though it is a financial article, and I'll talk about that in a little bit, really my intention is to cover more, you know, all sorts of topics going forward. But I am doing, as you mentioned, some local news stuff, and sometimes I scooped the other news outlets yesterday, the TV stations, the newspapers. I found out that there's a 2 years ago, the people where I live in a place called Danville, Virginia, right, actually, they voted to allow the construction of a Caesars casino. And because I do stock market stuff, I listened to a conference call, and the CEO let slip that they're going to set up a temporary location here, a temporary casino. So I wrote about what he said, and then 15 minutes later, one of the radio news people where I live, he put it on Facebook, and then 2 or 3 hours later, the newspapers did stories, although some of the stories had some of the information I had and made it inaccurate.
Ooh. well,
made
you know,
mistakes. So
Caesars, yeah, Caesars in and of itself is interesting to me because that's one of those casinos that was actually run well at the time that Trump was running his into the ground in Atlantic City. And Caesars is a large chain of casinos, not just under the Caesars banner, but they have a few different well-known casino brands out there. And I mean, Caesar's Palace, of course, the obvious, allusion to the historical and all that. It's interesting. You've been to a Caesar's, resort or whatever it is they're calling it, right? So it's interesting that there's a thematic thing that goes on there where it's like, you know, Roman emperors and stuff. It's funny. Your website now looks, I just went to the front of it while you were talking.
Yeah.
And, it now looks like it kind of used to look sort of like this before. This kind of looks like the old website when you were really, really dedicated to just financial stuff, except now you're going to be delivering all sorts of news. And you scooped a bunch of information from these other news outlets. They went to go steal from you and didn't even do it right, huh? They stole the information, but reported it inaccurately. Is that correct?
Well, they made one mistake, and the conference call was on a Monday, and I listened. Well, I got the transcript Tuesday, so I wrote this Tuesday, and you know, I just quoted what the guy said, and then linked to some facts. I have got the contract that the city signed with the company, and you know, I tried to contact. Well, I did. I contacted the Caesars company directly and asked them where is this temporary casino actually going to be located. They wouldn't answer my question. And I put that, you know, in the thing I wrote. And I said something like, it'll be interesting to see more details come out. And, so one of the newspapers contacted the city manager and got a quote from him, which didn't say anything definitive. But they got the date wrong of the call.
Of course.
They made in their article that the call happened that day. I don't know if they're just trying to make it sound like this was instantly breaking news, but whatever, you know.
Nah, you know what?
There's one thing about this, Chuck, that really puzzles me. So the radio guy, when I call him a radio, he does radio, but he does a thing on, puts it on Facebook where it's like the radio. And he has sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
He contacted a lawyer where I live that's representing the casino company, and the lawyer told him the news wasn't supposed to get out yet.
Right.
And then made statements that were off the record. And the guy, the radio guy, relayed that to me. And I said, well, tell him the CEO should open his damn mouth. You know, these CEOs, they get on these conference calls and they got to hype stuff up to get people to buy the stock.
Yeah, well, we want you to spread the information around to people who are going to spend money, but don't tell the public about it. You know, I mean, that's it's great.
Funny, you know?
No, and I love this, by the way. I mean, Mike, your website is almost designed sort of like mine, except you have the better tiles and the more friendly stuff for the mobile apps. So,
right.
I mean, this is very cool. That you're, but I mean, the delivery system is almost the same thing where you go to a simplified delivery.
We're both using WordPress.
Yeah, we're using slightly different WordPress things, I think, but either way, it's kind of a similar sort of delivery system. I like this. I think you're going to get better direct results for what you're doing with this, first off. But back to the actual news itself, it's interesting to me that these CEOs think, you know, I got to be able to hype stuff to the money people, but you know, the peasants aren't supposed to hear about this. What's wrong with you? So, you know, and that's when they're doing, you know, good stuff, bad stuff, or they're telling you we don't really care what the impact of what it is we're doing is, whatever. And this stuff constantly gets out, and it just so happens you happen to get a hold of one because you were in on it. And you had the wherewithal and the desire to share that information. Now, the majority of other people on that call are probably thinking they've got, you know, the inside dope, so they're not going to share. What would be the point of acquiring a position or the connection to be in on these conference calls if you're going to just share it, they probably think. So, yeah, it is the interesting thing that they had you there, you know, you're probably going to get yourself kicked off of some lists. for like, don't let Swanson in there. He might report it in his news. You know, that might happen to you, you know.
Well, what can you do?
What can you do?
Use a fake name and get in again.
Exactly. Don't tell him that. but either way, this is great. Caesars is an interesting study, though, because they've been able to, you know, as I've said many times, how hard is it to not lose money running a casino in Atlantic City? Well, ask Donald Trump. But other than that, nobody loses money doing that. You know what I mean? Even when they do these massive renovations, I mean, occasionally somebody gets in there that's inexperienced and thinks, you know, that they can be the big attraction. But it's funny because it's very small. You've been to Atlantic City. It's very small, area.
It's been over 10 years since I've been there. Goodness.
Yeah, but even so, it's a very small area.
It's not that big.
And the thing is, they are directly competing. Because you go to Atlantic City generally with an idea. Sure, there's brand sort of loyalty to some people, right? And they have all those programs and cards and stuff, which were very popular at a certain point, which promoted loyalty because you come and you keep building up your points on your card. We'll literally give you, you know, rolls of quarters to go play the slot machines. We'll give you hotel rooms. We'll give you tickets to a show. Different things if you maintain your loyalty. But that's a very small part of the game. A lot of people, the general public, when they go to Atlantic City to go do this from the surrounding area, when they go, they're not necessarily decided. They may have a place they're thinking of going, but they're easily pulled to one of these other places, which is the funniest thing in the world, because you'd figure that a guy like Trump would have the wherewithal to, you know, come and see Trump because we have the most elaborate, luxurious, blah, 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 BS, right? That was his whole game, and he lost in that attempt to market himself into strength there. No matter what he did, he held bigger events, he held more events, he welcomed in and gave cut rates to the, you know, rich people to hold your stuff here, bring your business to me, and still got beat in Atlantic City.
Yeah, did you ever go in the Taj Mahal?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I was, that's what, I mean, 2000, it was around 2006 or 7, actually, I would have gone up there. You know, that's when I was first getting into playing poker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was one of the first times I played there in, you know, in a poker tournament and actually got to the final table. I've been there a couple, you know, to the Taj Mahal two or three times probably, you know.
Right.
It was dumpy when I was going there, though. But the poker room was busy and it was large. Mm-hmm. But there was some, you know, it was a mix of characters. And, you know, I guess it's New Jersey. You know, there are people that look like pirates and stuff. You know, don't have.
Well, what you have there are, you know, you got your bikers there on a party. You got people going there for bachelor parties, and then somebody, you know, you're sick, you know. On their way down, they have gambled their entire lives away, people lurking in the casino. You have a huge contingent of senior citizens being bussed in constantly from surrounding states, from the retirement communities, because there's a bunch of those in Jersey. They run bus trips, you know, on a weekly. So depending when you show up there, you have a hell of a mix of characters. I just saw a cartoon recently. You know, I've always got to make cartoon references. It was a Family Guy cartoon, and I don't usually watch them anymore because I'm kind of pissed off, but a piece of it about them going to New Jersey from Rhode Island, and they ran a fake New Jersey commercial, and it was like, come to Atlantic City so you can flick a lit cigarette at a dealer when you get pissed off and lose, because that's New Jersey. And I went, yeah, that's about right. You know, there's fights on the casino floor. It ain't Vegas. Jersey is different.
Well, it's the only casino, I mean, the only place I played where I got scared and had to leave. So, and I was playing poker between, like, a kid.
Yeah.
and an old man, you know, like in his 70s, and some kid who's probably like 21.
Yeah, and that kid, the college kids that go there, no, wait, let me tell you something. The college kids that go there, some of them are in there professionally. Like, they are literally getting themselves through college by playing poker and stuff, and they've got a system, right? This is real stuff that goes on in Jersey. I'm not kidding. I don't know if this happens everywhere, but my understanding is Jersey is special. There's that. And here's the bad thing. You get nervous, you get scared, or you get threatened or whatever on the casino floor and you decide to leave. You know, the best piece of advice is don't go out onto the boardwalk if it's nighttime. right? Did you get that speech from anybody? Don't go on the boardwalk, because you can walk between the casinos on either the street side of the casino, or because stuff is along a boardwalk on the shore in Atlantic City for people who haven't been there. So the Atlantic Ocean and a beach area is there. You know, you can actually go on the beach during the day and all. And the thing is, though, you go on the boardwalk at night, and I mean, you know, anytime I've been there with a woman, it's like, look, you got a purse? I really don't carry the purse. And if you are going to carry the purse, make sure it's well secured to your body so it doesn't get snatched, right? And stuff like this. It's a little bit of a rough scene. And there are street performers.
When I was playing poker that time, it was a kid and this old man. I was sitting in between them, and they started getting an argument. It's been so long, I don't remember which of them did it, but one of them showed that he had a knife, you know. And then the other one said, well, let's go outside.
Yeah.
And I said, well, all right. I just said, I'm leaving. Got up and walked around, you know.
Well, guaranteed, if they were going outside, they were going to go on the boardwalk side, because the cops don't go out there at night. So, just saying. I'm laughing because you're giving me nostalgia for my home state, Mike. I love this. Sorry. I apologize, and I'm going to let you get back to it, but I just love the fact that Jersey is just, you know, a unique casino experience one way or another.
One thing about the casinos and gambling, okay, someone emailed me, and I think they're, you know, I know who the person is, where I live. And I don't know why I even emailed this back to them, because they didn't say anything about it. But they asked me something about the casino, and maybe they said they don't want to gamble. I don't know. But for some reason.
Whatever.
For some reason, I was looking this up a couple of days ago. How many people, I was trying to figure out how many people they expect to become gambling addicts. Because the people that have been at where I live, there's a lot of very religious fundamentalist types, you know, some of these people were against this casino coming on the grounds either that it would bring huge crime or
just that it's an immoral thing to bring gambling on a massive scale.
Some said that, and I actually respect if that's their opinion.
Listen, I'll give respect to that, but again, you know, it was just, this is my last Jersey comment, so bear with me, but, you know, you gotta understand the difference of New Jersey and the rest of the country. You know, there's the Indian casinos, and yeah, I know I'm improperly and politically incorrectly using that term, but sorry, that's what it is. You know, the Mohegan Suns and the, whatever, like the stuff they got up in Connecticut and all around the country, dotted here and there, there's a bunch of Indian casinos. But, you know, you go to Jersey and the churches are running bus trips to the casinos. You understand me? This is not, this is not like the rest of the country where there's like moral outrage, which is too funny to me for a couple of reasons. One, every kid that ever played Monopoly doesn't realize they're actually playing, the game with real estate in Atlantic City. That is Atlantic City. Okay. The most expensive piece of property in there is the boardwalk, right? And interesting, because you got to go all the way around the board to get from the cheapest piece of property to the boardwalk. But notice how the cheap living arrangements are right next to the casino. Okay? You understand? That's the truth. When you would go two blocks away from, like I said, all along the shoreline, you go two blocks away And, you know, in between those two blocks, there's a bunch of motels, you know, not the highest grade motels in the world. All right. Trashy motels and some very cheap housing. But then you get into a very poor area. And then you got to start getting away from that area in order to find better living accommodations. And it literally goes up incrementally, like your trip around the board in Monopoly. Okay. And a lot of people don't realize that there's some realities to the Jersey gambling experience that are just different from any of these other places. So in Virginia, what you're telling me is there's still moral outrage to the idea of gambling on some levels. And yes, sure, give respect. You got your moral compass. I got mine. And yes, sir. I mean, encourage people not to gamble and all that stuff. Okay, cool. That's your business. That's your life. And that's fine. And, then there's other levels to this. So, interesting that the religious people are having different issues and the practicality that the casinos might bring greater crime and stuff like that. I guess that's part of the reality as well, Mike, right?
Well, from what I've read, it's not going to be like these people are talking like everyone's going to become a gambling addict and then they're going to commit crimes the way drug addicts do.
But well, it just, I don't really... Yeah, well, just like when they start bringing liquor stores, when they start bringing liquor stores and check cashing joints to your neighborhood, people do the same thing. That's going to attract more of a criminal element. Okay.
Well, no, I think the real problem is simply going to be that, you know, this thing is likely, I mean, this is going to be, once it's really finished being built.
Yeah.
It's large. It's a Caesar's Casino, you know, that brand. Mm-hmm. And I go to the one in Cherokee, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and it's draws so many people. I mean, it's got close to 2,000 rooms.
Right.
And, I mean, this thing, when it comes here, it's going to easily draw 1,000 people a day on average.
Oh, yeah. Are they putting in an event? Are they putting in an event center?
If you have 1,000 people coming into a city, mm-hmm. you know, that are vagrant, not in the sense that they, you know, are temporarily, you know, they're moving around, they're not living there.
Yeah.
That creates crime. People, you know, some of those people do crimes of opportunity.
Well, people are going to swoop down on the tourists and stuff. Are they bringing an event center? That's another question to the Caesars complex because that's different than just hotel and casino, right?
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it's going to create crime just as if it was a concert. Having people come and go or anything.
Locally, you had an issue with that not long ago.
Yeah, we had that last year, a lot of the same fears.
Yeah, okay.
You know, people were scared that there'd be mosh pits and death.
Yeah, well, nobody gets killed in a mosh pit, but okay,
Didn't happen.
And it didn't happen.
The thing about the gambling, though, I read about trying to figure that out, and I'll tell you what I told this person, but so studies claim that it doesn't have to have a casino, but that around 1% of the population is addicted to gambling. Yeah. Now they define that. What does that mean? The study was claiming that these gambling addicts on average lose $3,000 a year and go into debt between $30,000 to $50,000 to do gambling. Okay. And this could be sports betting. This could be lottery. This could be keno. It could be going to a casino. It could be playing poker. It could be all sorts of horses.
Well,
anything.
Quick other note here because we're going to come up on the half hour break pretty soon. Yeah. But before we go into this further, Mike, I mean, you have a state lottery in Virginia, right?
Oh, sure.
So I mean to tell you that if they had no casinos in Virginia whatsoever, okay, if there was nothing else but the lottery, there would be gambling addicts sitting there spending their last dime on scratch-off tickets, hovering in parking lots of convenience stores if you let them. I mean, there's always going to be a population that's going to do this. And even if they outlawed that in your state, I promise you that they would find a way to gamble their money on, you know, apps
well,
that gamble.
I'm right on the North Carolina border. Right. North Carolina, when I was a kid mm-hmm. and we first moved here,
yeah.
they didn't have the lottery. And there were people that would drive here from right. North Carolina an hour just to play the lottery.
Just to get tickets. Which
every week.
Which,
know?
By the way, did you see that Powerball jackpot's over $1.5 billion?
Yeah, I haven't played that though. But is it still a billion? It's worth trying.
$1.5 billion, Mike. Apparently, I guess the drawing is Friday again. I'm not sure.
Is it Friday?
I think it's Friday. I'm going to try and scrape together a couple dollars just to be in it. Why not? But apparently, nobody hit it, so it's over $1.5 billion right now. The value of that thing. And of course that means that, you know, you take the cash option, you get $750 million. And then, you know, by the time taxes are done with you, you might have $300 million to you, right?
Well, look, I was going to say, we'll wait till Facebook crashes and buy it like Elon Musk is about Twitter, but.
Yeah,
well, I don't know if it'll go to a billion.
I was going to ask you.
235 billion now.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you about your views on Elon Musk and now actually taking control of Twitter. And by the way, I want to point out exactly how I was the only guy, seemingly, in independent media that said Elon Musk is going to automatically put Trump back on Twitter. Because everybody else went, oh, I don't know, you know, he's not. I said, yes, he will. That's exactly what's going to happen. And so he's done that. Okay. And just brace yourselves for whatever that means. Everybody's, oh, this is going to be great. Elon Musk is taking Twitter. That's a whole other story. Let's continue on with the casino thing, though, because with this coming to you locally, they're going to put in those columns. They're going to put in all that, Roman themed stuff, probably an event center, a large high rise hotel, at least. Right. And a giant casino area. So, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, I don't think that you're exactly having puritanical fears of gambling.
There, you know, play poker. I know that's what I'll do.
Easier whatever. Trip for you, because I mean, you literally will go to Las Vegas or some of these other places. Yeah.
Supposedly, I mean, I don't think this is scientific, but. The studies I could find about right. how many more gambling addicts does the casino create, mm-hmm. it said that 1% would go to 1.5%, but most of the revenue mm-hmm. that these casinos make, this is for sure because I was looking at the revenue statements.
Yeah.
I was wondering how much money, because I looked at I didn't look at Atlantic City, but there's a couple of casinos in Maryland and Delaware, and now there's already one that's opened near Tennessee. It's mm-hmm. it's in Virginia though. I was looking at how much money they make, and it showed where the revenue comes from, and 90% of the money mm-hmm. comes from slot machines.
Right.
In all these casinos.
This is mainly senior citizens sitting in there plunking. You know, and they create the casino environment so that you lose track of time. And that's what they do. They just keep sitting there and playing because they know eventually if you play enough, you will eventually hit a pot. And it's like a guarantee. It's just how long you have to play and are you lucky and what is your system? Okay, I bet three quarters this time and I go down to one. Whatever. This is the game they play. And like I said, I guarantee right now already, there are, even if the first shovel of dirt had not broken ground, there's already casino bus trips being planned by, like, you know, senior communities and senior groups all around the area within a couple hours of the place. All right.
Yeah.
And they're going to bus in tons of people. Some of them are going to go there just for the, they're going to give them a ticket to the buffet. Right. And they're going to give them a bus trip and a roll of quarters for some price. And it will be a giant, you know, core revenue generator. And then they're going to pick up the rest of their own way with their own methodologies. There could be big events there. There could be conferences there. There could be, who knows, concert tours. They won't create residencies like they do in Las Vegas because, you know, once you go to Las Vegas, where are you going to go after? Right? You're stuck there. So they have constant entertainment in Las Vegas, but, just like in Jersey, if they bring in the big tours or they bring in big events like, I like promise you a WrestleMania will probably be proposed for there. You know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It'll be something to watch. And, I'm sure there'll be a lot more for you to be able to cover in your news. Cause you are covering the state of Virginia, or at least part of it, very, very carefully, right? So ultimately, between you apparently scooping some of the other news agencies and then them playing, internet telephone with you and getting some information inaccurate, what else has come of that massive story? Anything? Mike?
Yeah, I lost you for a second.
No problem. I was just asking you what else has come of the story. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on with Skype and the internet today, just letting you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so what else has come of that story before we go to break, Mike?
Oh, well, I'm going to shift it to another aspect of gambling when we get back.
Okay, well, another aspect of gambling, which could be all about the financial institutions and what's coming up. And, oh, by the way...
That's what... We're going to talk about.
Yeah, and something else we could place our bets on. There is a selection day coming up in just a couple of days. I know everybody's watching the hot races, and people are curious about Herschel Walker and Raphael Warnock and what the balance of power will be if there is a great red wave and all that. So we could talk about that, or we could talk about the financial markets and what's actually happening. The Fed setting a record this week, apparently, with the raises of interest rates. And we got the guy to talk about that, casino gambling, poker, and everything else. Michael Swanson from WallStreetWindow.com is with me in the first hour on The Ocelli Effect this Thursday. And in the next hour, it will be Larry Hancock and Gabrielle Glanman. And we're going to talk about the JFK Lancer Conference coming up in just a couple of weeks as well. Stick around. Mike and I will be back after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into The Ocelli Effect.
Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapon. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many, many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I bought some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
But I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles started to really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never before published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Second segment of this live Ocelli Effect here on November 3rd, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. We are indeed live, but the majority of you do catch us further on down the stream via your fondle slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher du jour. So I welcome you to the show, no matter who you are, where you are, or indeed when you are. Michael Swanson, the man behind WallStreetWindow.com, is with me, and he's also an author. We had a very interesting discussion during the break, which I'm not going to reveal to you guys, but who knows? Maybe next year Mike and I will be talking about a trip that we took. We'll see. Guaranteed there'll be some interesting things to report. And, you know, Mike, you could probably, I don't remember what kind of phone you have, but you could probably bring something so we could take a couple of videos of things, right? I mean, even though I don't have a YouTube channel anymore.
I got a small camera too.
Oh, cool. You know, we might want to record. We might want to record some of this stuff, because if you and I go to where I was talking about, we might be able to catch something interesting about interacting with a government office. Okay. And, I mean, I know, nothing crazy, guys. Well, I'm not making any, you know, we're not storming a building or anything, but it would be interesting to see what happens when I try and do something at a government office, right? Who knows? We might actually pay a visit to a couple of interesting intellectual individuals out there in certain communities that author other books, stuff like that. Anyway, enough of that, because we're not talking about it right now. We're back to talk a little more about, well, casino gambling, but there's a lot of gambling going on. Yeah.
Yeah, this I was telling you before that I was curious how many people supposedly are addicted to gambling, and studies are 1%, perhaps 1.5%. And I was emailing someone about this.
That's all BS. But wait a second, Mike, before you go into emailing with somebody, you know how much BS that is, these studies about the percentage of people that are, you know, gambling addicts? I'm going to tell you why it's BS, first of all. Gamblers Anonymous exists, right? And A, it's anonymous, but it's not like Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that, right? A lot of people see chemical dependence as something that is, you know, formidable, a medical issue, so on and so forth. But gambling addiction is a little more subjective, number one. Number two, I promise you that there are, and I used to see this firsthand working, you know, in convenience stores and stuff, you know, trained in lottery. You have to actually be trained as a lottery agent and all that kind of stuff. Firsthand, as stupid as it sounds to people, believe it or not, there are people that will ruin their lives with scratch-off tickets. And I don't think that they, you know, and look, I'm not even saying, oh, we should ban them or isn't that terrible? It's a blight on society. These are the people that are going to find a way to gamble on something no matter what. Okay. And the thing is that there are thousands of grannies and grandmas, and it's not just the old people, but I'm telling you, they're more susceptible to it, that are out there sinking significant portions of their own money into just scratch-off tickets. And I used to see it firsthand, and I'm talking not just, you know, oh, they blew their paycheck or whatever. I'm talking about people that didn't pay their mortgage because they kept spending. They knew they were going to hit something big on the crossword ticket, you know? And these state lotteries that release, you know, new scratch-offs and marketing campaigns and everything else in all these different states, I don't think they're collecting real accurate data on the individuals that are probably destroying their lives on a daily with stuff like that, where they're sinking all their money into gambling on something, anything. Because they're not just doing scratch-off tickets, but they show up in a place like Atlantic City once in a while. They're not on the senior bus trip where, you know, there were some really, you know, poverty-stricken seniors barely living on their Social Security that would also get on those bus trips, and they didn't go to gamble. I knew a couple of them personally that would come back home with the roll of free quarters because they got such a deal on the trip that they spent, you know, like $20 on the trip. And effectively, it was to get out of the house for the day and go there and get a free meal because they would give them a ticket for the buffet.
One of those times that I went to Atlantic City, I was staying in a place called – a hotel called – or casino called Resorts.
Yeah, I know. Resorts International. And one other
– I was eating breakfast there. They had a good breakfast.
No, not a bad breakfast. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was an elderly couple talking with me, and they said – that they live in Atlantic City and they gambled $1,000 and got and stopped, and they did this on purpose so they can get free breakfast every weekend there.
Right. Well, that was the other thing with those comp cards.
Okay.
Yeah, the comp card. See, that's the other thing, right? I'm telling you that literally they give them a roll of quarters in their hands. They give them two tickets for the buffet. They give them a comp card to a casino, which, you know, one way or another has arranged this. So, like, you'll go to, you're directed to go to Resorts, or you're directed to go to Caesars, right? You stay in the group, safety in numbers, but some of these people will either gamble up to a certain point to earn their free rewards, or they'll stop, you know, and not gamble hardly at all, and they'll just be there for the day, right? And they'll just treat it like that. Now, those aren't the money makers, obviously. But then there's the people that are desperately waiting to go on that trip and have saved all their money all year, and they'll blow that, plus they got their debit card with them. And next thing you know, they you know, drew all of their money out. They don't have their Christmas money left. Well, they accidentally spent the money for their bills for the next month, and it's gone. And there are people like that that successfully, continually will turn around and do that, take out, you know, even, you know, those short-term personal loans and everything else, and wind up sinking it in because they thought the machine was about ready to pay out. They thought they were, well, got to the roll.
They've lost touch of reality.
Yeah. I mean, but they do that. And here's the thing.
I know.
I don't believe for a second that statistics are being properly collected on that, because first of all, most people do that rather anonymously. It's not really tracked well. And who the hell wants to admit that you irrationally gave away, you had enough money to survive on, but you irrationally gave it away, and now you and your husband are selling your house, or have had to sell your car, or have had to give up things.
Well, okay.
You know what I mean? Good. I'm sorry, I totally knocked you off track, didn't I?
What's 8 out of 300?
Well, 8 out of 300.
What's the U.S. population? And I'll tell you why.
Okay, well...
331 million.
331 million, so what are we talking? 8 million out of 331? Sorry, Mike, I didn't understand the question.
That's 2.4%, is that correct?
2.4%, well, would you have to multiply 2.4 times? To get to 330?
If I divide 8, what percentage is 8? It is. It's 2.4%. So anyway, this, who knows, you know, these statistics. I don't know how they're coming up with them. But here's the thing. Yeah. I told this person, look, everyone's already, there's already gambling addicts, not the casino. But this is what truly disturbs me about this whole topic. Because I know people personally that are on a bad path.
Right.
And I've been doing the stock market since the 90s, you know, knew a lot about it. This is the thing, man.
Yeah.
I told the guy, there is more people that you can invest and take on as little risk as you want or as much as you want.
Yeah, but it's ease of access, Mike. I mean, look, I can turn around. It's ease of access, Mike. Look, once a year I spend $10 on scratch-off tickets, right? And win, lose, or draw, I go, okay, that was that. Now, there's a lot of other people, they're right there, they're there all the time, it's easier to access it. People gamble in the stock market, that used to take a little more complexity to get into, I mean, previous to the time of Robinhood and all that. You know, you had to do other things to get there. You didn't just have to take a trip to the 7-Eleven, right? So, the fact that there's the scratch-off tickets at 7-Eleven, what they're arguing is that if you increase the ease of access to this and you make it so it's local, it's easier for somebody to go dump thousands of dollars, which, you know, dumping thousands of dollars requires a whole lot of time invested if you're going to buy $2 scratch-off tickets.
8 million people I saw these statistics.
Out of the U.S. population, yeah.
8 million people out of the U.S. population opened up Robinhood accounts and wiped out. You know, now there's another 8 million that haven't wiped out yet, but 8 million have wiped out.
Right.
And I know people that have lost, and these are just regular people when I throw these numbers around, you know, $15,000, $30,000, $50,000. Opening up Robinhood accounts. Now, I don't know what they started with. They got them to that level, then wiped out. You know, maybe they just put in 5,000. Maybe they put in 50. I don't know. You know, what they.
Yeah, and maybe they just got suckered. Lost. Maybe they just put in their stimulus checks. Remember, we were talking about people that dumped their.
We're doing that. Yeah. For sure. But, what I was telling this guy is you can take on as little risk as you want, as much as you want. You can turn investing into pure gambling.
Right.
And that's what all these people did on these apps and still are doing.
It's just like.
They're still doing it and they won't stop. I can't get them to stop. I tell them to stop. They won't stop.
But Mike, it's just like anything else. Look, you and I have gone out to dinner together. You have a beer. Okay, I'm not telling on you here or revealing anything, but you'll have a beer at dinner. I've seen you do it. And that's it. But you're not getting drunk. You're not destroying your liver.
No.
You're having a beer with your steak or whatever. You can do that and you can go into the stock market. You can invest, you know, conservatively and try and bet on something and make something over time. You could, you know, I know this sounds crazy, but like actually invest in a company that you believe in for one reason or another, right? I mean, you could do stuff like that, or you could go full tilt, gamble, and just, you know, keep chasing the big win, And again, same thing with the scratch off. It's anything across the board.
Yeah.
So the fact that this is going to really significantly raise or decrease, I mean, it's really stupid, except for the fact that it does give a greater level of accessibility to people
that are
already predisposed.
That's true. You're right.
Because if you really want to gamble, you'll find a football pool. Even if there's no legal gambling around you for 1,000 miles and you have no car, you'll find a football pool. You'll bet somebody, you know, you'll get into it, you'll create an office pool. You'll do something that'll get you there. Oh, that's not good enough? Fine, I'm going to go down to the 7-Eleven and get scratch-offs. You will find a way. So this idea that there's going to be some significant increase, if you're arguing about it, and not you, Mike, but I mean the general you, if you're arguing about it that on a local level this is going to create greater accessibility for people to be self-destructive, then I can't argue with you. But if you think that this is going to significantly shift, you know, anything, big picture-wise, I think that's crazy. Isn't that pretty much how you see it?
Yeah, I think so. And the thing is, I just tell you, like, the biggest problem, I mean, addiction is, forget about gambling. I think our society is built in with so many other ways to be addicted. The internet, the television, you know, just, and I think everyone is addicted to those two things just about.
Well, people are addicted to their devices, the games on their devices.
The phone, I mean,
sure. You name it.
I think I am, and I've tried to fight it and control how much time I'm on it. But where I, you know, the biggest problems where I live, as far as addiction go, in the area, not just the city, but the region, is opioids.
Well, there you go.
And heroin.
That's the thing, is no matter where you go, no matter what you do, look, if I lock a guy in a room all by himself with nothing around him, not even a stitch of clothing on, he might get himself addicted to masturbation. It's about a dopamine response in the brain. And that's all there is. All of this, you know, moral turpitude and arguments about the destruction on society. Here's the thing. There are landmines built into the human condition that do have a biophysical connection to the dopamine responses in the brain, and many of them are behaviorally based, not only stimulated by behavior, but encouraged and bolstered by behaviors. And that's all there is to it. No matter what you do, there's always going to be a portion of the population that is predisposed or literally designed to be addicts of one type or another. So anyway, now we blew a whole bunch of time on this, but I love this discussion. I wanted to get into it with you about what's gone on with the stock market this week. Of course, the economy in and of itself, because we have another gambling event coming up, which, by the way, I haven't checked in with Predicted lately, but I bet you, you like that? I bet you.
I just looked because you mentioned it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I haven't looked until we were I've looked during the show. 75% chance that the Republicans will take both the Senate and the House.
So a 75-cent bet will get you a dollar on Predicted.
That's right.
Let me ask you this. Do you have it in front of you still?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm looking at it right now.
Two things I want you to look up, because I'm going to give you my gambling tip of the week. Two things I want you to look up. Okay. And that is the Senator race in Georgia between Warnock and Walker. Okay, and let me know what Predicted has to say about that. What odds they're laying over there in that part of Internet Vegas?
Is there two Senate races or one?
The only one that I know is Warnock and
62% Walker.
62% they think Walker's going to win.
Yeah, 62%.
Okay, now
what do you think?
I think that that is a bet that you ought to take going the other way. Because bet on Warnock to win it. Although it's a coin toss. In reality, it's a 50-50, but I think you can make some decent money if Warnock wins. Now, let me give you the real gambling tip of the week. What do they have down for the governor's race in Georgia between Abrams and Kemp? Because this is where the money can be made, I believe, folks. Predict, it's a website, by the way, where you bet based on the percentage, and it pays you a dollar. Okay, so you have
well,
to...
It's got the Republican at 94 cents, 94%.
Oh, okay. All right. So there is no money-making opportunity there because he's got it. Okay. Yeah, the only logical thing to do would be to place a small bet on the real long shot, which is Abrams. But, I mean, listen, if you're going to go to predict it and bet on Abrams to win, why don't you do me a favor and just donate that money to me because it's gone. You're not winning anything. Abrams is not going to take the governor. If Abrams takes the government race, a governor's race in Georgia, Mike, I'm going to tell you this right now. I will no longer argue with another individual who tells me that any modern election has been stolen, because that is the only way that Stacey Abrams could possibly win the governor's race in Georgia, is if it is stolen. Organically, she cannot win. She is she's that bad of a candidate in Georgia because she's an anti-gun candidate in Georgia. No statewide race will be run by an anti-gun anybody in Georgia, okay? Number one. Number two, she is just the undesirable candidate all the way around. No matter how much the Democrats want to support her, and no matter how much, you know, they literally gave her the role on that Star Trek TV show. She was the president of Earth. Stacey Abrams, the politician. Did you know that?
I saw it mentioned. I didn't watch it.
Okay. No, I know. You stopped. You got disgusted with Star Trek and you stopped watching it. But I'm just telling you that they made her
not
president.
Because of that.
In the future.
I'm just getting cranky.
I understand. But like 9,000 years in the future or whatever it was, they made her the president of Earth. Okay. So I'm just telling you how much the liberals love her. But the state of Georgia, yeah, part of the state of Georgia loves her. Not enough of the state of Georgia loves her to even potentially give her a shot at the governor's race. So the fact that they have it at 94 cents, yeah, they're going to pay you 6 cents if you're right, because nobody wants to lose their money all day for no reason. Kemp is the winner. The other reason why she is absolutely illogical and irrelevant as a candidate for the governor of the state of Georgia is that the GOP controls the state from top to bottom. So any cheating, any chicanery that could go on, the GOP already has it on lockdown. There is no way she could possibly win a race for, say, the mayor of Atlanta, something like that. Or they could potentially try to put her in Congress. But, you know, because that would limit... And I do mean the House of Representatives. That would limit the areas in which she could be voted on. But even then, I doubt that she would be a viable, workable candidate for something on a large scale. She is impossible to elect in Georgia. If she is selected in the state of Georgia, it is a fraud, period. I stand by that wholeheartedly. There is no way she can win. So, here's your money-making opportunity for the week and my gambling tip for the week. Bet on Raphael Warnock to win, okay, for the Senate race, because I think he just might, due to the fact that you know, they're comparing domestic violence records with each other in their commercial marathons right now all across the state. That's what they're doing, and Raphael Warnock, who speaks from the pulpit that Martin Luther King Jr. spoke from, who is a pastor. They're comparing their domestic violence records, and they are, and this is what these two candidates are doing back and forth, and also laying claim to who actually has a better connection to God, who has actually been more saved, who has actually been more the recipient of grace under God. This is literally their biggest campaign issue in their commercials, in their presentations, and everything right now. That's it. I mean, outside of that, yeah, sure. Walker's also running commercials about how Warnock is with Biden on everything, and he's not the guy that helped you out. But here's the deal. Warnock has actually done a few things that have benefited some people in the state of Georgia. And at 62 cents, you have the opportunity to make 38 cents on every, you know, on every bet. Okay, so what happens is you can bet 62 cents on... No, you can bet 38 cents on Warnock, right? Because it's 62 for Walker.
Yeah, that's right.
So
that's
you can bet 38 cents on Warnock, basically, I mean, you do it at a dollar, but effectively, you put 38 cents on Warnock, he wins, you get a dollar. I would not, you know, bet the house on it, but
actually,
it's would.
All screwed up. Yeah. This thing is screwed up because that's a pretty wide margin, 63.
Yes,
63
it is.
Cents to 41, and then they have another thing you can bet on which Senate race is going to be the closest.
Yeah,
and it's that one's in the lead at 22 cents.
Well,
in Nevada, New Hampshire, you know, there's all these states.
Yeah,
but
no,
that's supposed to be the closest race.
I think it will be the closest race, but I'm telling you now, you have the ability to make good money betting on that. And if you bet on Walker, and it means that, you know, for every dollar, basically, if you're betting 62, you bet 38 cents on Warnock and you win a dollar. You bet 62 cents on Walker, you make a dollar, right? I would go with the Warnock bet and therefore literally get a 62% return on your investment, right? Because if you lay out $10, you should get $16.20 back. That's the way that works,
no,
right?
You're getting more than that.
You're getting more than that.
Yeah,
okay.
You're getting,
I thought you get, okay, if you lay out 38 cents, you get a dollar. So you're getting a 62. If you lay out $10, you're going to get $16.20 back, right?
Because
you get 60.
Yeah. If for every dollar you put in, you're getting $2.43.
$2.43. Okay, that's different.
Yeah.
But even so,
it's
wider
better.
Margin.
It's
go get
better.
It. Telling you. That's your money-making bet of the week. If you can use Predict-It, which, by the way, the fact that I got a bad ID right now has actually screwed me to be able to use Predict-It because you got to prove your ID. So I can't do it. But if you want to go gambling online and you can gamble a little this way, I think you'll be very happy if you gamble a little bit, just a little, not a lot, on Raphael Warnock to take the Senate race in Georgia. But you're an absolute fool and an idiot if you bet on anything other than, Kemp retaining the governor's mansion in Georgia. Cause Stacey Abrams is the worst candidate possible for this area. Period. I guarantee you I could run my new puppy Buster against her and beat her in Georgia. So long as I say Buster is pro-gun, he wins. He's pro-gun and peeing on your fire hydrants, but he won't take your fire hydrants away because he won't defund the police like Stacey Abrams. End of campaign commercial. What do you think, Mike? Should we run Buster next time around?
They're going to have to do something different if they want to have a chance,
We can run Buster as the Libertarian candidate for whatever it is.
Are they making guns a big issue in Georgia? Is that what she's campaigning on?
No, she's trying not to, but the fact that Kemp has said, you know, she's a gun grabber and he's not. But, no, it's not the big issue, but it is the issue that hangs there. The big issue is she's a liberal like Joe Biden and whatever. She's unelectable, and the DNC has dumped a ton of money on her. Celebrities have dumped money on her. Everything else, she actually has had, you know, the connection to get Barack Obama to endorse her. All that, it does not matter. She is not going to make it because she's anti-gun, pro-abortion. Okay, literally, she has been dumb enough to say that, you know, that heartbeat noise that you hear when babies are in the womb, that it's not a real noise. Okay. That's not a real heartbeat.
Yeah.
I'm going to take your guns because gun safety is important. And, oh, by the way, yes, of course, I wholeheartedly support Joe Biden. And I was the president of Earth on Star Trek. No. She's not including that in her commercials. She just basically has come out and said, Brian Kemp is an extremist. And that's that. And, of course, she is famously the one that the Republicans will point to tell you that Democrats will not concede when they lose an election either. Because she says that it was stolen from her, but I assure you, whether it was or wasn't is irrelevant. Because no matter what they stole from her, they could have stole from her in reverse three times, and she would not have come close to winning. The fact that she even came close to winning, and showed up on the ballot is beyond me. She is unelectable in the state of Georgia. Period. Anyway, Mike, I know you had other stuff you wanted to get to, and you won't be with us next week, right?
Nah, but the world still will be here.
Well, we hope. And by the time we get around to the 17th, you and I might have to discuss the JFK Lancer Conference, which is coming up this month, because it is the 59th anniversary of that assassination. And I am already scheduling myself to be part of that conference. I was debating about it, but I might be able to twist your arm and bring you in on it, too. So we'll be talking about, oh, wait, we're talking about that next hour with Larry Hancock and Gabrielle Glenn. But, Mike, I will see you in 2 weeks, though, right?
Yeah, I'll be here 2 weeks.
Excellent. And we may have some plans in the future, but in the meantime and in between, go over and sign up for the newsletters, the releases, the morning emails from WallStreetWindow.com. If you haven't bought The War State, the book, which is authored by Mike Swanson, what the hell are you waiting for? Get yourself a copy. I like the physical copy myself. It's that red book on the sidebar on Ocelli.com. But damn, go get yourself a copy of The War State, and while you're at it, Why the Vietnam War? Two great books by a great thinker, writer, and a friend of mine, Michael Swanson, who coincidentally was fully endorsed by me in this show even before he was a sponsor. But full disclosure, he does sponsor us and does support us, and I hope you do too, and you need to support him. Michael Swanson, thanks for doing this with me. I want people to buy your book. I want people to go to your website. Do it, do it, do it. Mike, thanks for doing this with me.
Thank you. Good talking with you.
And we will talk to Mike in 2 weeks, but we'll be talking to you in a couple of minutes, maybe a little more than two. Stick around. The Ocelli Effect will return with Larry Hancock and Gabrielle Glenn in just a few.
Support Chuck Ocelli at Chili.com.
There's no money in it, so
yeah, that is
that's the problem.
That's the biggest problem, I think. And you know, some people would say that, look, you're in an age when you can be independently supported, but quite frankly, I'm on that business model too. And look, I'm not going to complain, but I'm going to complain. Okay, because people want to support you, they love you to death, but honestly,
so if you're listening in, this is a very unsubtle request to support the damn show, and I want you to do this too, because the Ocelli Report is one of the few places where Greg Palast can get his stuff out. I mean, you'll still see my bylines in some of these outlets, but nevertheless, I used to be a regular on CNN and on MSDNC, no more.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started.
WallStreetWindow.com.
Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Ocelli.com.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks. Larry Hancock. For more information, go to larry-hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at amazon.com in digital or physical form.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia,
by author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War,
by author Mike Swanson.
Gold, silver, the stock market, WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Revelation through conversation.
In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, by Larry Hancock. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. Larry Hancock's book, In Denial, rips the cover off many of them. Using new files, it exposes things about the Bay of Pigs that no one has ever written about before. It shows why it really failed and why the United States did not learn from it. Secret Wars became a staple of U.S. covert operations and are still happening today. It also shows why other countries today are doing secret operations with more success. This is the book that puts what some want to deny into the light. In Denial, Secret Wars with Airstrikes and Tanks, Larry Hancock. For more information, go to Larry-Hancock.com. Pick up your copy of In Denial at Amazon.com in digital or physical form.
third segment of the Ocelli Effect goes live here tonight on a Thursday. Yes, indeed, it is November 3rd, 2022, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and we are live. But the majority of you do catch this further on down the stream, and I appreciate you just as well. So you may or may not be shocked to know that Larry Hancock is back with us. Why are you shocked? Because as I stated some time ago, Larry was not well, and we were not going to even fill the second hour slot on the Ocelli Effect on a Thursday without his presence. So we actually started doing some 1 hour podcasts with Mike Swanson, didn't we? Yeah. Nobody fills Larry Hancock's shoes. He is the author of a tremendous amount of books, not just on the JFK assassination, but revealing to many the behaviors, the personality, the actual mechanics of what goes on with the security state, not just in the United States, but we have most notably done quite a few shows about Vladimir Putin, about various other nation states, oh, and the interference of the U.S. government in their politics, their elections, their so on and so forth. Usually ahead of the headlines, Larry publishes books. and he's also written about UFOs and the behavior of the national security state in light of that. And, geez, I don't know. Do we have all day to give Larry's accolades, his accomplishments, his resume? Sure we do, but we're not going to do that right now because I want to get to talking to him. In addition, we have Gabrielle Glenn with us, and those of you that don't know, which is probably a lot of you because usually when I talk about JFK Lancer, the names that come up don't always include Gabrielle Glenn's name, but she has been a part of it for some time now, and she has definitely been somebody working with the likes of Deborah Conway and, oh well, everybody who has been involved with the JFK Lancer thing for the past many years, but most intensely in the past few years when it's been a virtual conference, which just coincidentally I participated in a few times and even brought others to participate in with. So we're going to be talking a little JFK Lancer conference with Gabrielle Glenn and Larry Hancock. But first and foremost, I want to ask Larry how he's doing, because his absence was sorely felt. Many people kept asking. And, you know, before we get into the great stuff that you write and all that other stuff, just as a human being, man to man, I am so glad that you are all right and still willing to talk to me. You know, cause some people change their minds and decide they don't want to do that anymore because I have a tendency to speak, a little bit more of my mind than maybe I should sometimes. It's okay. But, Larry, not just glad to have you on to talk about JFK Lancer, but just glad to have you back to talk to and, to still have my friend with me to talk to on a Thursday night is, you know, no offense to Mike Swanson. He's a friend I can talk to on Thursdays too, but there's a reason why, two of the, nicest, best, and smartest writers that I could possibly put together are together on a Thursday. And, no, I didn't replace you in your slot during your illness. So first and foremost, how are you doing? How did that all go? And, you know, and that's about it, Larry. Thank you for coming back on. How's things?
Oh, I appreciate all that, Chuck. And things are good. I'm well. The recovery went fairly gracefully. Still working on getting a little strength back. It was definitely not a summer that I would like to repeat, especially since My heart problem kicked in just like a week after I turned 75. And, you know, the first question was, I think I missed a warranty payment somewhere. So the timing was really strange, and it occurred over the 4th of July. So the whole thing was strange. Lasted a couple of weeks that I would prefer never to repeat. But the good news is after some 3 months, I'm pretty much back to normal and doing the activities that I was doing before, whether it's research or speaking or writing or chores around the house for that matter.
Well, certainly not trying to bust your chops, but it was a freak thing. I mean, really super out of the ordinary that, quite frankly, I was sitting here and went live and was waiting for you to, respond to a message. I mean, you and I don't message each other intensely before the shows, but, you were just a no-show. And I said, oh, I didn't know what happened, honestly. And then I started asking around, and a few other people didn't know what happened. And when we did find out that something had occurred there, I was struck and really concerned. And again, so glad. I mean, look, you're probably going to outlive me. You're somebody I think of as in way better shape than the likes of me and many other people that we know. But it was a bit of a surprise. And again, just want to express my gratitude for the fact that you are. You are here, you are strong, and you're not going anywhere, and thankful that you're back to talk about anything with me. But we will get into some of that.
It was a shock. It came out of the blue, too. There was no known history. There were no real signs. I would encourage everybody to have checkups. I didn't, because I really didn't. I didn't have a history that I knew about. Later, right. I found that I had more the family history than I had known about. But the upside of the whole thing was it did get me a 100-mile helicopter ride in an AeroVac helicopter, which was fun at the time, and then things went downhill.
Mm. No, I hear you, and my sympathies. I mean, I didn't have your wife's phone number, but I would have gladly called her up and seen if there was anything I could have done. I'm sure it gave her a little bit of a shakeup, but again, so glad that you're past it and with us and strong and solid. Once again, we have Larry Hancock to look to as a grand resource. But so happens that you mentioned your research and writing. Well, that's on a lot of different topics. It seems to me like you're constantly writing and researching, have been for many years. But so happens that one of those topics, just coincidentally, is the JFK assassination, which you can look to the entire Larry Hancock collection, which is no longer on YouTube, but I assure you it's out there, and get a synopsis of every one of Larry's books. But your recent writings, well, we may have to discuss some of that with the other guest we have, Gabrielle Glenn, because, she's going to have to do, be in on the Zoom recording anyways, and who knows what else regarding the JFK Lancer event. Which, hey, Gabrielle Glenn, is this the first show you've done, or have you done other podcasts and stuff?
This is the first one I have done.
Ah, I am privileged with the first appearance by Gabrielle Glenn, who has been long time a part of the JFK Lancer events, and working alongside Deborah Conway and everybody else one way or another. Wow, I got a privilege here tonight. Not only do I get Larry Hancock's return, but the first appearance of Gabrielle Glenn on a podcast or radio show to talk about this. How you doing tonight, Gabrielle?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm staying quite busy with getting the conference ready this month. And all that entails with getting the speakers ready, getting their presentations recorded, and prepared to go live on the 18th.
Right. I was just going to say, tell us when, and can you give us a little bit of a scoop about who's going to be appearing at the conference? Obviously, you can't disclose all of what they're going to do because, you're going to have to actually attend the virtual conference, JFK Lancer, to find out. But it is going to be the weekend of the 18th, I guess. That's a Friday coming up.
Yes, we are doing it November 18th through the 20th. It will start at 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, and it will go until about 5 o'clock in the evening each day with a one-hour lunch break. We will have various speakers, such as Larry Hancock, some new faces like Johnny Cairns, and many other speakers as well.
Well, Johnny appeared on this show. Interesting researcher, actually one of the guys that I think is a younger guy, a clear and interesting part of what I think will be the future of the JFK research community. But there's probably some other names there. Have we secured? I mean, you're herding cats right now, basically, trying to get speakers together for this conference. And some of them will be pre-recorded over the next few weeks. You might have a couple in the can already, And it's possible I might show up here or there during the conference in other people's presentations. Disclosure, I'm going to have Carmine Sabastano return to the show pretty soon. And apparently he's got a proposal in. Is he a confirmed speaker yet?
He is a confirmed speaker. We also have Brent Holland, Jim DiEugenio, David Boylan, Robert Groden, Rex Bradford, Bill Simpick, and Larry Schnapp as agreed speakers.
There you go. So Brett Holland, the guy who does that, you know, the Canadian JFK guy who wrote a book, but also is a broadcaster, does that show Night Fright, all that. You know, excellent and interesting guy. He's been a guest on this show. Mr. Boylan will be presenting with Larry Hancock, right?
Correct.
And
actually we're tied at the hip, but we're doing 2 hours. He and I are doing one presentation on revisiting Lee Oswald, and then where I take the lead, and then David is taking the lead on a second where we both join in and talk about Lee Oswald in New Orleans in the summer of 63. So it's a double hit.
So you're going to do 2 hours, and we're going to get a whole lot of new and very well-researched information, because first thing is, if Larry's involved, you know it's extremely deeply researched and well-written. And that's not even giving any credit to Mr. Boylan, who deserves a whole lot, because you guys have worked together quite a bit over the past couple of years. And we're going to get a very serious and concise look at Lee Oswald in New Orleans. Are there any other highlights, Larry, that we should bring up here? I mean, what Gabrielle just talked about there, you know, Groden and everybody else, that's interesting there. But, I mean, she's so used to it. What are the other highlights? And again, she's probably a little tired from herding cats, because it's difficult to get everybody together on these things.
We have a couple, as a matter of fact. Just recently, I sent Gabrielle a note that Bart Kemp has agreed to present. And in addition to doing his own presentation, he will be visiting Malcolm Blunt and doing an interview with Malcolm and sending that to us for the presentation. Mm-hmm. So that's getting Bart and Malcolm is really exciting. I think another thing that's really exciting, two things really, is that we will have Larry Schnapp, as Gabrielle spoke, and Bill Simpich. They will be speaking. Bill will be doing his own presentation, but they will also address the Mary Farrell Foundation lawsuit against the president and NARA in regards to release of the documents, forcing release of documents, and a lot of other things. And I think there's a real big news story there that they'll be talking to. And in addition to that, Rex Bradford will be doing something. Rex will be talking about the Mary Farrell Foundation, but he'll also be talking about an effort that he's involved with Gabrielle and with JFK Lancer, which is an effort to bring back the content, the research content, off the JFK Lancer website and make it available again on the internet. And that is would be a major task, considering how much research information is there that was accumulated over years and has been unavailable since that site got hacked.
Right. And Rex Bradford would be exactly a guy that should be around for a discussion like that, because he has been an integral part of really assembling and making a reality out of the Mary Farrell Foundation's database of absolutely voluminous information regarding the assassination. I mean, everything from making the Warren Commission volumes easily and readily accessible to the public via the internet, from the I don't even want to think about the amount of time the man has spent simply scanning and making available documentation that is essential for people to have an understanding of the again, the just overwhelming records that are, you know, something that we should all be able to have access to. But without making trips to the National Archives and everything else, you couldn't get at this stuff years ago. And Rex definitely knows a lot about that. Again, most of the people that we mentioned here have been guests on this show for one reason or another, but Rex was really on here not just for his own writing, but for the grunt work that went into just doing that. So, you know, and again, this is kind of a separate issue with, restoring information that was available and now needs to be brought back because of different chicanery or, well, there's a much less polite term, but I like to control my language on this show, that people have pulled in order to, take down, restrict, or change the direction in stuff that was available through, Lancer's website, let's be honest. So we'll leave that to the imagination for now, but I guess we'll be able to get updates on all that, find out about, the real actual, again, hard work that goes into it, and all that. So that'll be interesting. And something that you kind of glossed over real quick, one of the, let's call him lesser known among those outside of the community, but more brilliant individuals when it comes to a base of knowledge. I mean, Malcolm Blunt, anybody who's in the know, as far as real information goes, has at some point had to consult Malcolm Blunt, okay, on something. No offense to anybody, especially you, Larry, who has written, a great deal on the case or anything, but you got to say, if you're somebody who understands what's going on here, what was it, like the old E.F. Hutton commercial? If Malcolm Blunt speaks, a lot of us will turn our heads and make sure to listen. So that's a great thing that he'll be part of the conference and brought in because somebody's going to make a trip to go see him. That's great. Bart Camp, another guy who has come up in recent years. This is a very eclectic group of people. Are we missing anybody off the list so far, Larry, that we should know about? Or actually, jump in, Gabrielle, if you want to add. Is there something else we should know, a special piece? Bob Groden, of course, when it comes to photographic stuff. Again, there's your grand poobah of photographic evidence, right? Okay. Both in motion picture and stills.
Mike Chester will be joining us, who is, to my view, like one of the best medical resources available, who has done work with primary materials at NARA. Okay. And listening to Mike, I could listen to him over and over again because the way he explains things, every time I hear it, I hear something new. So having Mike to speak on medical matters is real. And I'll let Gabrielle's recruited a lady who's not been with us before, Monica. Gabrielle, would you like to talk a little bit about Monica and how she came to us and what her background is in her book?
Yes, please.
Monica was recommended to us by Jim DiEugenio to have her as a speaker at this year's conference. She will be speaking on Kennedy's presidency and his life leading up to the assassination, and that is what her book covers as well.
Excellent. And a live question in the chat room for you, Gabrielle. Is Dr. Newman going to participate in this conference this year?
We have not heard back from Dr. Newman yet. We are still trying to get him as a speaker, though.
Okay. Now, I knew that he was a potential speaker because I am off and on in contact with, full disclosure again, our friend Alan Dale, who has been part of many Lancer conferences in the past for sure, and he works constantly, continuously with Dr. Newman, so I knew he was a potential speaker, but it is possible that other speakers are going to be added as well before we get to the 18th, right, Gabrielle?
Correct. We have quite a few people that we are supposed to.
Oh, sorry. Gabrielle might have cell phones and all, folks. You know how it is. We have intermittent losses there. You kind of dropped cell transmission wise, Gabrielle. But really quickly, Dr. Newman is among.
I apologize.
That's okay. It's cell phones. It's technology. It's what happens. So back to what you were saying, though, Dr. Newman is a potential speaker, but has not been confirmed. And there are other possibilities, you were saying? Gabrielle? Okay, minor disconnection here with Gabrielle. She was telling everybody, though, that there is the potential for various other speakers to come back in and be involved with the conference. I think what I'm going to do here, folks, is take a quick break and see if we can't straighten out the issue here with contact and all that, because as per usual, you know, things do what they do when you're on live. So stick around. The Ocelli Effect will return, hopefully, with Larry Hancock and Gabrielle Glenn. Minor communication interference aside, we're back. So it is what it is. Look, in the age of cell phones and digital communication, you never know what's going to happen, and we're live as we do this. So it is as it is, and we'll leave it intact. So the question that we ended up with there about Dr. Newman, he is not, as of now, part of the conference, just to be very clear. But you never know what happens between now and the 18th, so who knows. But there are potential others that maybe are in the process of being confirmed and all that. So we'll go back to Gabrielle Glenn about it. And who else? And also I'll talk about Jim DiEugenio quickly in a moment. But before we go there, who else is a potential speaker or presenter that might be added or is in the process of or whatever possibility? Gabrielle.
Hello. We have a few potential speakers who are newer into the research, are not well known, that we are currently vetting their research before we announce if they would be participating or not.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always open to many new people who would like to try to get their foot in the door. Of course, after vetting the research to make sure that it does check out.
Well, of course. So, I mean, there are other potential newer people. Are we getting some of the younger crowd in there? Because that's always been my concern. You know, sorry again, and no disrespect to the elders among us, but it is good to have fresh new faces who might have a different slant, a different opinion, and could be working on areas that maybe were underappreciated in the past due to accessibility and, well, again, the JFK Records Collection Act and all the things that have grown out of that. And I might ask Larry a little bit more about the lawsuit coming up, but, I mean, there's a lot of potential here for all that stuff. And you and I have actually kicked around an idea, Gabrielle, about possibly doing a live roundtable event that we're trying to put together Have you gotten any bites on that hook there regarding, hey, how about if we try to do this, pull this off over that weekend? Anything so far?
So far, we have a couple people who say they might be interested depending on the timing. So we are getting with them trying to figure that out, see if we could do a live round table and figuring out all the logistics with that and pricing and all that fun stuff.
Right.
And hopefully we'll be ready to announce that next week.
Well, if so, definitely get me the particulars because I want to participate in it myself. I've also got Mike Swanson on board with the idea. Again, you know, the timing and all that pending, and he's been a presenter in the past at Lancer, and we could be at least part of an interesting roundtable depending on who else it is that you can find that will agree to it and can be available at the right time. So, stay tuned. Maybe there'll be more about that. And who knows where that'll go, because that's an unplanned, unscripted thing. And it'll be dependent upon people that want to participate in it on the other side, asking questions, digging about particular subjects, maybe giving a voir dire, if you will, to a presenter or a past presenter, depending. So that could be something that, you know, is a potential event that could be along with it. Do we have any other interesting guests? I mean, we did mention Jim DiEugenio. He's been a presenter at various conferences. Do we know what area Jim's going to cover at the Lancer Conference, his subject?
Jim DiEugenio is supposed to be covering the new documentary from Oliver Stone and giving us some insight to how that came about and all the information that is told in the documentary.
Which does feature some of the other names that have been mentioned, including, let's see now, the lawyer there, a friend of ours, Larry, help me out here. Bill Simpich, that was the name I was fishing for in my scatterbrain. Bill Simpich, I think, was part of that. There was a lot of other people that had presented at Lancer that were part of that Oliver Stone documentary. So Jim's presentation on that ought to be interesting. I still have not gotten my 4-hour copy yet. I've gotten a 2-hour copy, but I wanted the 4-hour copy of that thing. Interesting that that came out, last year? I think that was available before the conference last year. But, Larry, any other highlights we're missing here?
Well, I think another group that we've invited, again, we don't have the confirmations yet, but in case any of them are listening, we've reached out to the Dealey Plaza UK group who just had a conference in Canterbury and invited their speakers to present or anybody from the group to present. So just in case anybody picks up this podcast, we always like to get as many folks from, you know, overseas as possible, and they've been very good about participating in the last year or so. So we're certainly trying, in addition to getting Bart and Malcolm and I think Johnny, we would like to get some more folks from the Dealey Plaza group. They did a fine set of presentations at their conference, so we're shooting to include that. As you said, Chuck, herding cats really applies to this whole process because everybody has to make up their mind, and when they do, it like leaves Gabriella like a day or two to roll up all those presentations and get them ready for streaming. So the pressure gets to be intense with people making up their minds at the last minute.
Right. No, for sure. This is, it sounds like it's a work in progress, to the average listener, and it is. This is happening. And you never know, because some people, don't have the idea that you might need a little notice to put things together. So there could be last minute additions that we didn't even hear about here today. But one thing I can guarantee is that, already from the framework, You have a diverse set of individuals who have done just, huge amounts, many years of research. So you have a lot of veterans that are coming into the mix here for sure, and some new faces, and this is the way it gets done. New ideas along with the rock solid, older work that is already established, and the new information that's uncovered by people who've been at it for a while. So, that's what it's all about. And again, what is the theme though? We're 1 year shy of the 60th anniversary now. Can you believe that? The 60th anniversary, of the event in Dealey Plaza, not UK, but that is an organization. In Dealey Plaza on November 22nd, 1963. So Gabrielle, is there a theme this year? Is there, something in general that, should be the catchy thing that people need to keep in mind regarding this? Oh, and by the way, where can they go to follow up? I mean, there's a Facebook page, there's a few other places, so I'm gonna need you to give me all the links so I can put them out along with the show notes. So email those to me, Gabrielle. Make a mental note so I have them all correct and I don't mistype anything. But where can they go to keep up with the information as it evolves? And how can they stay informed? And, hey, just in case somebody's listening who could be a valuable participant, is there any possibility that people could reach out to you and become part of this as it's emerging?
There are numerous places they can go to keep up with all the new happenings with the conference this year. They can go to jfklancerpublications.com, and that is where you would purchase your tickets as well. You can go to the JFK Lancer Facebook page, Facebook group, the JFK Hands-On Facebook group. We also share updates on the Dealey Plaza UK Facebook group. And we share basically in all the JFK research groups, we are able to share updates. We also send out a constant contact if you are part of our mailing list, with updates bi-weekly, if not weekly. And you can always email me with any questions at jfklancerproductions@gmail.com or gab.blend12@gmail.com, whichever email happens to be working that day. We've had a lot of issues with our email addresses lately.
Gotcha. Well, if you go to jfklancerpublications.com right now, the front page is showing me the 2021 virtual conference, and let's see, 2022 conference is scheduled. Okay, it's got the actual schedule there for the conference, which will be, let's see, it says November 18th, 19th, and 20th. Just reading it as I go and trying to scroll, by the way. Sorry, blind guy doing this. It's a little sloppy. But on the list there, you have David Boylan. You have Johnny Carnes. You have Monica. Let's see. How do we say that last name?
Wysack.
Okay, Monica Wysack. New person, so, new to me. Monica Wysack, Mike Cheshire, Jim G. Eugenio, Larry Hancock, Robert Groden, Rex Bradford, Gil Jesus, either way, Carmine Savastano, Brett Holland, Larry Schnapp, and Bill Simpich. And it says more to be announced. By the way, I should be working on the presentation with Carmine, and there could be possibilities that I'll be added to that list at some point. But that is the list as it stands, and I put the... Let's see, I put the link there in the live chat room at Ocelli.com, but if you're hearing this via the podcast, go ahead and look down in your show notes. You'll find that link, and Gabrielle's email will be there. Okay, but let's see if we can't get a collection of the Facebook links and the Twitter links and whatever else so that you can get in touch, get involved, and participate or attend the JFK Lancer Conference for 2022. Because that's
Chuck,
what we're talking about.
Yeah, Larry. Probably something that we didn't cover, and that's, yeah, it's a virtual conference, and it gets streamed. And as you said, there might be a live group session. But in addition to that, Gabrielle runs a live Facebook page for conference attendees. And right. That's really important because that gives every attendee a chance to have a direct interaction with the presenters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on there for most of the conference, or was last year. But this means that you can actually ask questions of the presenters directly, you know, during and after their presentation. And most of the presenters hang around through the whole conference. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of dialogue that goes along with it. It's not as impersonal as it might feel in the sense that it's a streamed event and, you know, you're not there in person, but you do have online access to the presenters and for questions and answers and dialogue.
Right. Very good point. Actually, I participated in that Facebook page last year, and I saw that others did as well. And indeed, if you're participating in the conference and watching the streams as they come up, there's also opportunities to replay those streams and all that. So, you know, if you're thinking, well, can I sit at my computer all weekend? You don't have to. You can actually watch them later. But if you do it as they're coming out, you can participate in the live Facebook page, which does allow you to interact with other people who are also watching, also participating, as well as the presenters themselves. So there's a very, very good point. And yeah, I mean, there's a way to directly, and I'm not a big fan of Facebook anymore, as everybody knows, but during the conference last year, and I think even the year before, I sat on that page and made sure if anybody wanted to talk to me, or if, you know, there was stuff going on there, I was watching it. So it is a way to participate in it directly. So that is an excellent point that we did not bring up. So I would advise people, if you're going to do that, yeah, you can go and look at that and really actually participate in the conference that way. Although we are talking about maybe doing something that is direct in real time, you know, something, I don't know, we can maybe even arrange for callers. It depends. People to join the Zoom call and so on. That's a possibility, but even if that doesn't entirely come through, you still have this Facebook interaction, which is almost in real time. I mean, as much as Facebook can be. And again, even though I despise Facebook, I will hang out for that. And I know many other presenters were coming and going throughout the weekend and on their schedule during that as well. So that's an excellent point, Larry. Is there anything else we missed, Gabrielle, though, that you think should be brought up here?
I think what should also be brought up is that we do have a separate price for tickets for conference only, where you get to view the conference at your leisure until the end of the month. And we have a price where you get the digital downloads included.
Okay.
And so you'd be able to download them and continue watching them after the end of the month.
Which I would suggest
so
to people.
We have moved beyond conference DVDs. Mm-hmm. I think actually Gabrielle will appreciate that. For years and years and years, the question was, oh, when would we be able to obtain the DVDs of the various presenters? And, you know, that used to be a huge recording and distribution problem, and at least this allows us to move beyond that issue.
Right, but are the DVDs still going to be available, though, Gabrielle, after the conference, or is it all going to be digital download now?
We do have DVDs upon request,
mm-hmm. Okay.
But we definitely prefer if people would do the digital download or purchase thumb drive.
Right. Well, there's the thumb drive option, but, you know, I would, again, suggest that if you're going to do this, you should certainly get either the thumb drive or the digital downloads, because fact is, these presentations, I want to be able to watch them beyond the first month, because, frankly, you're going to want to be able to go back over some of this stuff. Some people have some very interesting and intricate slides that they will, you know, because that's another thing that's good about this is you have the ability to view the slides on your own machine, right? So it doesn't matter where you were sitting at the event as far as how well you can see them. I know I'm concerned about the visual aspect, but the thing is, if you retain the copies yourself, you can go back over them and watch them. And also, hey, you know what? Didn't this guy say this during his presentation? Maybe you see, you're reading something a month after the conference, 2 months later, 3 months later. Let me go back. I think that Larry Hancock said something about this, and rewind the video and take a look what he's got. What was he saying about it? Oh, yeah, of course Larry's right. That was correct, and Larry told me about it before I saw this article. Of course you did, because Larry's always ahead of the curve. But I'm just saying, and I mean that, by the way. That's just not me kissing up to Larry. It's hilarious because, you know, how did we complain about how you wrote your Putin book, 6 months too early?
I came out with the phrase creating chaos, and then, like, in 6 months, everybody on major news outlets was using creating chaos, and I got no royalties whatsoever.
No, you got nothing. And you know what else you got nothing for is a whole year at least, before the Pentagon said, we're going to release all these UAP videos. Larry's already got a book out for, like, 2 years, right, on the behavior of the national security state called Unidentified, that, you know, it would have been perfectly timed with the DOD releases, but nah, they don't tell Larry, so he's always ahead of them. Anyway.
You made a really good point, though, I think, to emphasize the difference in watching the streaming versus getting a download. I know from personal experience, David Boylan's presentation on Oswald in New Orleans will last around an hour, mm-hmm. Okay? Knowing what's in his slides, you could easily take another 3 or 4 hours to really grab off the kind of information he has in his presentation, the amount of detail,
right,
the names, the documents. You know, that's an example. Mike Chester is another with the images
the medical
that he's going to show.
Oh, yeah. The medical slides.
You need to look at them again.
Well, you're going to have to view that stuff more than once. I mean, Chester's going to show you stuff, and it's going to be, you know, based on the primary evidence, he's going to be, you know, there's a reason why a diagram or why his slide is created is because he needs to put all this information in one place for a reference. Cheshire especially, that's a very good point. With the medical evidence, you don't want to look at it once. I guarantee it. Okay? So, yeah, with the medical evidence, certainly, and if you have some very, you know, let's just call it a thick volumes of information contained in your slides, you're going to want to look at them, freeze the video, and say, okay, what is it I'm looking at compared to whatever it is you're studying? If you're studying in depth, if you're actually paying attention, you might want to have these things on hand to be able to go back over them. So you get your digital download, and you can do it at your leisure, like Gabby said. And that's a lot easier than trying to just remember what was said or what you saw, right? And so, yeah, definitely get the access that'll last you more than a month. Your digital download, very much helpful. I've been grateful for them more than once to be able to go back and go through the references, and all those options will be available. Plus, Gabby said that they'll be available on thumb drives, which, much better option. I know some people still use DVDs, but I was curious about the physical because, I might want some of these on a thumb drive, to be honest with you. So, but that'll all be available pretty soon, right after the conference, the thumb drives, right?
The thumb drives will be available the 10th of December.
10th of December. There you have it. So within a couple of weeks, you'll be able to get a thumb drive of these, or at least place the order for the thumb drive, which, you know, will get out to you fairly quickly, and then you'll have it in your hot little hands as opposed to you know, relying on just the digital copy. But I guess if you purchase the thumb drive and you've already been to the conference, you might have more than one copy even. You might have the digital copy already, but now you've got a hard piece that you can plug into another computer, take it with you somewhere else, and that would be the good thing about the thumb drive. And considering that I've always got to transfer things between machines, I appreciate the thumb drive as well. So, anyway, all of that stuff, and actually participating. Do you still have a student rate for the conference as well?
We do still have the student rate. The student rate is locked in at $34.99.
Okay. So $35 to students, and I'd love to see a lot of students participate, especially, you know, my biggest complaint always is we need to get the younger crowd more involved, because we're going to need backup for some of the people that, well, are no longer there. Quite honestly, and we need to continue to do this research, unfortunately, because the crime committed in 1963, no matter how you slice it, is still relevant today, and I promise you will still be relevant in 2023 as we unearth more and more information regarding this and get it, you know, something resembling the truth, but definitely getting at all things resembling the truest information possible when you do your research the right way. So, Larry, anything else we missed? I know we're over time just a touch, but quite honestly, we started late, so we're going to go about another 5 minutes or more if you guys need it. What else have we missed?
I think as far as the conference goes, we've covered it pretty well. I did briefly mention that Bill Simpich will be doing his own presentation and then making remarks on the lawsuit. Larry Shramp will be focused on the lawsuit. This is a really big contemporary story at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And having Larry and Bill are the lawyers. Bill is the lead, and Larry is on file with the court with him. And this is a major legal action that's being undertaken. It's gotten a lot of media coverage. It's brought a lot of attention back to NARA's role and what it's legally empowered to do, and the conflict it's having with the various agencies, and getting their input. And I think, quite frankly, Chuck, if you're thinking of organizing something that's real time, a part of that might well be include Larry and Bill to give you an update on what's happening with that lawsuit at the time of the conference, because that would be a real critical date with some things that are going on with the court. But this lawsuit is a serious opportunity, not just to get document releases and document redactions, but it covers a broad spectrum of what NARA has the legal responsibility to do in terms of making that information available, and actually what NARA has the legal authority to do to collect information over the objection of agencies like the CIA and the various federal agencies that have been very difficult to get information from, NSA, you name it. And I myself, until Rex and I probably spent the better part of 3 weeks before the lawsuit was filed, with Rex helping Bill and Larry on technical aspects relating to NARA, I learned a lot about what the JFK Record Act really does tie down legally that has not been enforced.
Right.
None of the administrations since, none of the presidential administrations have enforced the aspects of that act. The current administration is not enforcing it, has a choice to do so. But the legislation, whoever wrote it, the individual involved, were extremely competent and extremely aggressive. And so I think this is a big story that's going to be part of this conference. And I really bring it up because, like I say, you may want to consider it as part of anything live, just to get Bill and Larry to give the most current information on what's going on.
Well, Gabby, you know, Bill, one, the other, or both would probably be the best centerpiece to that live interaction possible. So, you know, I would request that you make a mental note about that. And if all I got to do is serve in the role of sort of emceeing that situation, and we could have a couple of other guys just on the side for whatever else comes to mind from the other side of the participation there regarding questions, I think that would be a perfect thing to have as a centerpiece for that live interaction, Gabby. So I think Larry's quite right. That would be perfect. I think that would be the most appropriate thing. And is there anything else, Gabby, that you think we missed? I mean, before I go, because I want to say something to Larry about this whole situation with the JFK Records Collection Act, and I think we'll close this presentation tonight on that. But is there anything else that you think we failed to cover for people that, you know, might get them in more interested in attending the conference?
I think we have covered everything for this year's conference, but okay. I would like to announce that we plan to be back in person next year for the 60th.
Excellent. That is extremely good news, and I'll tell you this. If that is the case, I don't know what my financial situation will be at that point, but if I can financially arrange it, I'll be the first one to tell you that I will be there. I don't know if I'll be a presenter or an attendee or whatever, but I want to be there for the 60th. I want to go to Dallas again and definitely be in the same room with a whole lot of people that are focused on this case at least one more time before I'm done on this earth. So that might be exactly what I do in 2023. So I'll tell you that. So, Larry, really quickly, I'm going to give you guys notes and links so that everybody can go to the get the information, follow up, and keep informed for themselves about how the Lancer Conference, the November in Dallas Conference, is going to emerge, even though in November in Dallas is virtual this year. Good news that it won't be virtual next year. Looking forward to this one and that one. But either way, Larry, you know, when it comes to this whole thing with the JFK Records Collection Act, and I have worked quite a bit, actually, in independent media to inform people about this stuff as time has gone on, regarding the fact that this was, you know, an executive branch agency that was literally erected for this purpose, you know, and the timing of it, who signed it into law, the fact that it has not been enforced because there was no mechanism for enforcement. This was one of those things that the mainstream media outlets definitely skipped over and did not inform the public about, you know, adequately in my mind. It is one of the biggest bones of contention I have. And in recent years with recent administrations, as I said when we got together in 2017 in person, it was amazing to me, the people that had faith in, say, the Trump administration, that, oh, well, he's going to disclose everything. And what did he do? Business as usual. Well, no, we're going to acquiesce to all these agencies. And there's nobody there to really force it in the other direction. So, well, hey, we released a bunch of stuff, but not all the stuff that was promised for 25 years, because a quarter century wasn't enough time, apparently, based on the requests from agencies, right, in 2017. But okay, let's move forward. Oh, don't worry, the Biden administration is coming in. We have faith in that because we believe in the Democrats. This is what other people said to me. I said, well, you know, don't hold your breath, because business as usual will continue unless there is a push, unless there is a literal physical, or bureaucratic or legal push to get this done, nothing is going to be accomplished. I'm sure I love you guys who think that the Biden administration was going to do something different, but you know what? I wish you were right, but here we go. And what did we see? They made excuses again for why it is that more than a quarter century later, after this was being revisited by a executive branch agency specifically for that purpose, they still were resistant to releasing this stuff because, again, no arm of force for enforcement, no mechanism enforcement, no progress. Now there's actually something going on here that might accomplish something, and I think that is a huge, huge, sorry to borrow somebody's word there, a huge story that needs to be understood, and I think a lot of people have actually missed it, despite the fact that there has been some coverage. So, I don't know, a little bit of optimism. What are your thoughts on this, Larry, that going forward, there are actually efforts here to, I don't know, maybe get something done regarding this? What are your just thoughts in general about it?
I think the first thought I have is that what's escaped attention up to this point in time is that the actual legislation, the law, and the language in the law is much more stringent than anyone has ever really discussed.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the agencies have been able to get away with responding to NARA with the same kind of terminology that they would use for FOIA request,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of the blanket, you know, sources and whatever. That is not the language in the law. The language in the law requires that anything that is withheld be provably exceptional. That this is a level of proof beyond routine same day business. And it was written to be that there had to be an extreme, you know, proof of endangerment of the national security, and that explanation had to be not only given to NARA,
mm-hmm.
it had to go into the public record. It has to go into the congressional record, as a matter of fact. And this right. is a level of, you know, holding them to the law that simply has not been in place. Now, NARA itself has certain roles in all of this and responsibilities in terms of, you know, making demands on the agencies, getting information, looking for stuff that we know exist,
right.
And we cite a lot of that in the legal brief. NARA has responsibilities, but the president alone carries the legal responsibility of the enforcement, which is why the lawsuit had to be directed against both NARA to execute their responsibilities,
right.
and the president to execute his.
Right.
You can't avoid it. They have been kicking it down the road, administration to administration, because nobody has forced compliance with the law.
Right.
And there's some dates in the law that Larry and Bill would discuss where that needs to come to an end. And the
right.
court has the opportunity to demand that it come to an end. So,
well, and there's,
I think the thing
that, yeah. Well, there's language in the law, which I've pointed out to people over the years. And by the way, in 2017, all that had to be done was virtually nothing at a certain point. But because there was an effort to continue to kick the can down the road, this is where we are now. So there are words in that law that, you know, seem like I'm nitpicking at it when I say this, but I've read it a few times. And, you know, when a word like must is used, It means must. It means this must be done. This is not a question of, well, it could be done if, you know, blah. No, there is, but the problem has been so far that there's been no mechanism by which to force or to cause enforcement to take place. There's plenty of things here in the law that basically are being violated by many individuals. Let's not forget the public and private hands part of this either. Because there's a bunch of stuff there, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, the supremacy of the federal, no, don't get me started. The point is that there is stuff that was a must that should have been done, and simply because nobody is there, as an enforcement mechanism, and the agency in and of itself had been dissolved, there's virtually nobody to complain to without a legal remedy being introduced. And that's what I was saying for a couple of years. And people thought I was just putting them to sleep and, you know, being a zealot about this. But I was saying, this is literally not the way this is supposed to be going. And the fact is that since no one is, you know, compelling compliance, that's the only reason why certain things aren't happening. And, I mean, I know that's kind of a grand oversimplification. But I think I must point it out. What do you think, Larry? Am I out of my mind?
That's that's implicit in the lawsuit. The bottom line is the lawsuit makes it very clear that these documents and these records must be delivered. The lawsuit makes it very clear that there is no other recourse to get these documents. FOIA won't get them. The standards in this law are way above FOIA. So if they won't give it to us because of FOIA, this is the only way to get them. And the law was written with that in mind. The people writing this legislation, this law, knew that. And so we have no other recourse. We make an argument that also stresses that there are damages related to this. There is a, you know, there is, in kicking it down the road, there are damages to the system, to making public information available. Mm-hmm. We've had other people join the lawsuit. And so, no, you're right on the money, Chuck. It's, there was no other recourse.
Right.
The law is explicit, but the only way to enforce it is to make people obey the law.
Right.
It's not a discretionary thing. You either obey it or the court says you're in violation. The fundamental thing is there's no other recourse than to obey the law. But you have to bring that to the court. There were just no other option.
Exactly. So I'll close it on that, but before I get out of here, I just want to say go over to Larry Dash or Larry-Hancock.com, because that website's still functional. Yes, Larry?
What's the last time I looked?
Okay, fair enough.
But if not, go to Amazon and you'll find me there.
Listen, if you go on Amazon, you can find a ton of books written by Larry Hancock. And guess what? I fully endorse all of them. And most of them are on the shelf behind me. You guys can't see at home right now because I'm not doing video tonight. But they're on the shelf behind me, I assure you. As a matter of fact, no other author has as many books on my shelf as Larry Hancock does. Just saying. And so grateful and glad to have you back. And I look forward to having discussions with you about this topic and many others in the very near future. As a matter of fact, Larry's going to consult his calendar, and we're going to see how many Thursdays we can get Larry back. You got a few to catch up on, Larry. Come on now. You got to catch up. I know you weren't feeling good for a little while, but come on. Now you're just being lazy. I'm busting your chops.
I've caught up on most of the chores I missed this summer, so it's time. I prefer this, Chuck. I'm more than happy to trade those chores out for Thursday night.
I know, but primarily, look, I love you. I love talking to you, and I want to make sure that that we continue to allow you to give the gift of all of your work to everybody. And so if you don't have Larry Hancock's books, or you're missing a couple out of the complete collection, go get them. Amazon.com, whatever. Go to Larry-Hancock.com. A couple of books I think are not available on Amazon, but that's okay. I'm sure I've got a link or two for that. So I'll give you links for Larry Hancock. And we're also going to give you links for the 2022 Lancer Conference, which will be virtual this year. And next year, it'll be in person. But before we get there, we got to get through this one. And this one's going to be eclectic. It's going to be interesting. And there are still researchers being vetted as we speak for this upcoming presentation. Gabrielle Glenn joined us, first time on a radio show or podcast doing so. So, Gabby, first I want to thank you for doing this, but also, anything else you want to say in closing outside of, let's go to the conference and, see all of the work that Gabby is never going to get full credit for, because it's a lot of work. Again, herding cats, I'm being kind. The kind of work that she's got to do to get everybody together and put these presentations together. And, I'm kind of a jerk because I kind of started trying to add to her work here tonight a little bit and say, well, let's do this, Gabby, and let's do that. But, I appreciate you taking the time. I appreciate your efforts. But again, if you want to tell people, go over to, JFK Lancer Productions, all one word, .com. And, you can start there. But we'll give you a list of links you can go to keep up with the conference and all that. What else should we say before we're done here, Gabby, because we're about done?
Thank you for having me on the show, Chuck. And I just want to make a correction. It's JFKLancerPublications.com.
Oh, publication.
Where they can go and
The blind guy read the link wrong. Yes, JFK Lancer Publications.com. Did I get it right that time?
Yes.
Okay. JFK Lancer Publications.com. I know I can put the right link in the live chat room at Ocelli.com, and I always double check the links in the show notes. So JFK Lancer Publications.com. Also, if you're a Facebook addict or user, we talked about online addicts, but anyway, in the first hour. But anyway, if you go over there, there is a Facebook page for it, and there will be a Facebook interaction page for the live conference as it is being released and streamed and all that over on Facebook. But hey, you can find JFK Lancer Publications on Facebook as well, which I think is still just JFK Lancer on Facebook. But anyway, all the proper links will be there. I encourage you, if you're interested in the subject at all, you may want to at the very least get well informed about the current lawsuit. But there's a whole lot of exciting research that's going to come out of people like that whole list I gave you before, which includes Larry Hancock, who was on the show with us tonight, David Boylan, Johnny Cairns, Monica Wizek. Wait, I probably said that wrong again, didn't I, Gabby? What, how do we pronounce her last name?
Wysak.
See, I did it wrong again. Monica Wysak. My apologies, Monica. Sorry. Mike Cheshire, Jim DiEugenio, Robert Groden, Rex Bradford, Gil Jesus or Jesus, Carmine Sabastano, Brent Holland, Larry Schnapp, Bill Simpich, should be myself added to there shortly or possibly, and there could be a potential for a few more names to be added. But that's your starting list at the moment for the JFK Lancer 2022 November in Dallas virtual conference, which will be Friday, November 18th, 19th, and 20th. Yes, in just a couple of weeks. So that's that. That's the Ocelli Effect tonight. I want to thank Michael Swanson for being on the first hour. Of course, we are grateful, glad, and absolutely thrilled that Larry Hancock returned with us. Larry-Hancock.com. Go over there. Or just buy one of his books from somewhere. Do it. And, of course, Gabrielle Glenn, who is working with JFK Lancer. We appreciate all of them and all of you, because, after all, I am merely Ocelli, and all of you are indeed the effect. Good night.